Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson RV, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, and Ray Marine Electronics.
Good morning and welcome to the best and worst hunting fishing song of all time edition of the Outdoor Line. Here, Rob Ensley along with Joe Pyburn in studio. Nelly's elk hunting.
Yeah.
All by himself.
No,
in Montana.
He's got Mike McCauley with him.
I know, but we're not there to chaperone him.
No.
What's he doing over there?
I talked to him yesterday, man.
Yeah?
He's fired up.
He is wound up, man. He got that new Browning Max long range. He was shooting, ripping shots up to 500 yards yesterday.
Yeah. Holes through holes.
This is it. This is the worst hunting and fishing song of all time.
Might be the worst song.
I think it is. I think they got some market penetration out of this one.
We were driving home from our hunt. We do these long drives going hunting. Sometimes we're driving for 15 hours. So, you can't just talk the whole time. We know every story. I've heard every story you've ever had.
Oh, yeah.
So we listen to music, and at some point you find yourself singing along to some song.
And we don't sing along to this one.
No.
I'm pretty sure Barney wrote this song.
Yeah, it's like, listen to that.
Yeah, this is awful. Or Nelly.
This will ruin a hunting trip.
It might even ruin this radio show. We let this go on for too long. But we've got a great packed show here for you in store. Brown is Zimmerman coming up, a Sportco Pro staffer at 6:25. She just arrowed yet another giant bull over in Idaho a couple of weeks ago, and she's going to jump on and tell that story. She's just a tiny little thing, too.
Yeah.
And she gets after it.
I told her yesterday, I was like, man, for her short little hunting career, she's killed some great bulls. I'm like, man, you're a grinder. That's what you are. And she's like, oh, I guess that's what I am. I'm a grinder. I was like, yeah, you stick it out.
Great gal.
She's there for 8 days before she killed that bull.
Yeah. Works out all fall. Shoots her bow year round.
Yeah.
She stuck
a baby around with her everywhere she goes.
Yeah. She stuck a 370 bull in Washington a few years ago. We had her on after that show. She gets really emotional, too, over it, which is we all do.
We all do.
But
yeah.
Pretty neat. So she's going to jump on 6:25. Talk about not only taking that big bull in Idaho, but processing that much game. Because they bring it home and they process it all themselves. And some of her favorite recipes and all that stuff. So 6:25, she's going to jump on. 7 o'clock, our good buddy Austin Sandman from Honk Stomper Guide Service over in Eastern Washington. There is a pile of geese on the east side right now. And he's having some problems with the snow geese because it is not open.
It's not open.
And they're piling into the decoys.
If you go to his Instagram, you'll see these videos of just wads of snow geese landing in the decoys, like 10 feet away from the guys in the blind. And at first, it didn't click that it wasn't open. And I'm like, I kept waiting for, take them, And they'd land.
And then more would land, and they'd fly away because
they're kind of screwing up their program.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah. Not open over there for snow geese yet, but once it opens up, it's the 6th of November.
A couple of weeks.
And those things are in big trouble.
Oh, man. Well, then they won't come in.
Yeah.
Because they've already seen the drill by then. Yeah. So, no, that's how that works. 7 o'clock. So, Austin Sandman is going to jump on the honk snarper himself. 7:25, Jess Pryles, our good friend from Hardcore Carnivore down in Austin, Texas. She's a Browning Pro staffer, and she's got one heck of a YouTube channel and website as well. Jump on hardcorecarnivore.com. You can also check her out on YouTube. Her videos are amazing, her barbecue videos.
Yeah, cool stuff.
We were checking out some of those yesterday and texting back and forth. And I know you called me. We're like, oh, you see this thing? Some caveman recipe style or something.
Man. What we do in the backcountry, when we kill an animal, you want to enjoy some of it on the mountain. You've been eating, our freeze-dried meals, which are great nowadays. Back in the day, not so good. Mm-hmm. You wanted some meat at that point. But we've been cooking up some backstrap on sticks, and it's great.
She's got something amazing going, dude.
Putting it straight on the coals. We'll ask her about it when she comes on.
We'll press her up. She was just hunting. She was on a Browning trip down to Texas recently. Her and our good friend Shondi Campbell from Browning were down there on a big dove hunt. And again, most of the pictures were of Jess cooking around a fire somewhere. I was just like, oh, you're killing me. Yeah. You know, cold libations and barbecue food coming off and all that stuff.
We need to get invited to one of those.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
We were talking about it. We're like, there's got to be some easier stuff.
I know. We're laying in the dirt on top of some mountain for 4 or 5 days. You know, and don't get me wrong, we love it. But at the same time, we're like, there's got to be an easier way to do this. Like those tree stands they sit in. It's like a little turret you look through, you know, and you get your heater.
Not all the time, but every once in a while, it'd be nice to be like, oh, we just sit in a tree stand and
hungover,
and the deer come walking by. And then we get to go have Jess cook us amazing food.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, we're all in. But you mentioned steak on a stick. And that's what we do in the backcountry. If we're lucky enough to get one, which we have been very fortunate the last couple of years to tag out on opening weekend. We did it again this year, but mostly because we packed in 2 days ahead of time. And we took a couple of notes from Chris Dunham that jumped on a couple of weeks ago from Western Hunter Magazine. He suggested getting in 6 days before we couldn't quite get away with that. So we piled in 2 days before the season, and we sat there all day on Friday, and I watched a buck all day for 8 hours. I laid on top of that mountain.
And when you do that, you think, man, I got him.
Oh, yeah.
I got him.
So I watched this buck all day. All day. And he's bedding down. He's sleeping. He run around with some does and bedding down. And this is a nice buck, you know.
Yep.
And I'm like, I'm already patting myself on the back. And I'm watching one basin, and you're watching a different basin. And then at 5:30 in the afternoon, it's just about dark, you know, he gets up, and he leaves. The county.
Yeah.
He is gone. I watch him walk probably 2.5-3 miles out around the corner, out of sight, and I'm like, you've got to flip and be kidding me. I just laid and froze my rear end off for 8 hours watching you, and you're gone. We got lucky. We found him the next day, but man, I thought that was the end of it.
So. Yeah, and when you spend 2 days kind of scouting and you know, we didn't move around a lot. We did a lot of just sitting and watching our area and watching these basins, which is kind of what you have to do. If you're going to go scout, the last thing you want to do is go tromping all over the country and blow everything out of there. But when you spend that much time watching a couple deer, and
take
that's
a little
your,
ownership
that's your, that's
at that
your,
point.
Yeah, well, and that's your deal. That's your game plan at that point. To have them just get up and walk away, and then you're like, what do I do tomorrow? Like,
that's kind of what
that's
it was.
It. I got nothing.
And then we woke up next morning, we glassed for 3 hours, and really there was like nothing going on. It was warm, that kind of warm forecast was kind of settling in Eastern Washington. It was going to be close to 70 degrees that day. And anyway, we got lucky. We found that buck. I was able to get, with your help, a really nice buck over there on the opener. And then you got one the next day. And a lot of other folks tagged out as well. I was getting a lot of photos bounced around on my phone and stuff. And saw some nice blacktails from the west side. Buddy of mine got a huge whitetail over Northeast Washington. Got totally lucky. Caught this thing, you know, first thing in the morning before. You know, it's like he forgot he was nocturnal for 10 minutes. And that 10 minutes,
he screwed up.
It cost him. Yeah, yeah. But
he didn't get the memo that it was. There's going to be guys out there with rifles.
Yeah, yeah. But steak on a stick.
Steak.
So run our listeners through steak on a stick. It's kind of self-explanatory, but it is awesome.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, kind of the key to steak on a stick is the stick. You don't. We actually found some dried sticks and kind of worked those up. And here's the thing about dry sticks. They catch on fire and they burn pretty quick. So get yourself a green stick, 2 little forks on it, sharpen them up a bit, stick your – you brought seasoning that was unreal. It was so good. And we just basically seared those things in the fire. You just stick them in there close to the coals, sear it off. There's medium rare. We had a nice raw, flat rock.
The same rock we used last year. It's like a little granite countertop, and you want a little dirt on there too. It adds a little flavor to it.
There's dirt on everything. I mean, our hands are filthy.
That's terrible.
Our knives. You're cutting up.
Yeah.
You're cutting the deer that we're eating with the knife you broke your deer down with.
Why not?
And there's just like hair on it. You know, filthy, disgusting. But, oh, dude, there's nothing better than, you know, having some real meat, some delicious steak in the backcountry. And that deer is phenomenal.
Yeah, those things eat good. I mean, these were excellent, too. The ones we had last year in there were a little younger, and they were over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Just unbelievable. I remember you called. You had cut a chunk off the neck or something, which normally goes into hamburger or something. And you were like, you got to try this stuff. It was incredible. And last year's deer was great. Same with this year. Ton of fat. These deer had big saddles of fat on them. and just incredible eating. So,
I've been eating deer pretty much since we got back. And that weird little cactus buck that I shot, which, you know, never really formed testicles, so he didn't really have any testosterone flowing through his body. He never went into the rut. So pretty much all that thing did was lay around and eat. And, you know, when the other bucks are chasing does and fighting, he's like, I want nothing to do with this. I'm going to go over here and just munch on some food. And that deer actually had like some intermuscular fat in its backstrap, in its hind quarter. And so I ate that the last couple nights. It's the best deer I've ever eaten in my life.
Well, yeah, the backstrap had marbling in it from that deer. Yeah. Crazy. It didn't spend any time rutting, running around, chasing does, had no urge to do anything except get fat. And that was a huge deer.
Triploid deer.
Yeah. Yep. Massive deer. How about this one? You like this one? This is better. You'd be surprised. I mean, Joe Pyburn and Ryan Lampers, two of the toughest guys I know. You'd be surprised to learn that some of their favorite music, like Paula Abdul. Joe's like, yeah, we used to go on these road trips and listen to Paula Abdul
the whole way to
Montana.
Because we had like two tapes or CDs, whatever.
Back then it was tapes.
Tapes and CDs, yes.
This is one of the greatest of all time.
This is.
Yeah, yeah. See you later, honey.
We'll see what guys say on the text toy.
Text toy zone, by the way, 710-710, powered by Yamaha Outboards. Shoot us a text. Let us know what's going on this morning. We're going to jump out of here for a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about some of our favorite backcountry foods that are out there nowadays. A couple of great companies pumping out some backcountry foods. Again, 625. Here in a couple of minutes, we've got Brianna Zimmerman jumping on. It's the Outdoor Line at 710 ESPN Seattle.
From the shining shores of Puget Sound to your radio, this is the Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Line. You know, when you work at a big lodge in Alaska as a guide, as you did, Joe, you usually stay like in a little cabin. You got a couple of bunks in there and you bunk with somebody. And you were lucky enough to bunk with your cousin, Ryan Lampert, one of the toughest human beings on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys would go back to your cabin every night.
A lot of Paula Abdul. A lot of Madonna. Now listen.
What would go on in that cabin? We did a little dancing. We did a little dance party in there. Like turn the blue light on.
We wouldn't dance, but we definitely would. We'd move around a little bit, you know. A lot of tying flies, man. You'd need some music when you're tying flies. And listen, our room was popular. We'd be pumping out the jams like this, and there pretty soon there was a group of guides standing outside the door, listening to the music. Listen to that, Paul. Good stuff.
That's good. I can't imagine Ryan Lampers listening to this.
But hey,
you know,
yeah.
Some's got to bring him down to earth, you know, and this might be it.
This will do it.
Yeah. So we're talking backcountry foods a little bit, and we have eaten them all and made them all ourselves, too. We've both got dehydrators at home, and we've spent a lot of time. I know you, Joe, you kind of got me into that, making my own meals at home, and you can just crank out some incredible stuff. But these companies are cranking out some foods that are just insane. We were sitting on top of the mountain last week and wishing we had more. I could have eaten two or three bags. I brought some Peak Refuel in with me. You were eating Pinnacle, a new company.
Yep.
And both of them have some stuff that is absolutely out of this world. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, all the companies, I think there's so much competition now. You got Peak and Pinnacle and Heather's Choice and Off Grid, Ready Wise, Good to Go. Of course, Mountain House, one of the originals.
Yeah.
They're all so good that they've kind of elevated each other, and they have to put out a good product, or guess what? There's too many options. I'm just not going to buy it if it's not good. That Pinnacle, pretty new to me. Bayless turned us on to that in Montana. Mm-hmm. They have a jalapeno cheddar biscuits with sausage gravy that I pretty much could just eat it the rest of the season.
Yeah.
It's like breakfast deal, but I just eat it for dinner. It's amazing.
Yeah, pretty. And then they had a Tuscan chicken.
The chicken was unreal.
I think I was eating creamy chicken and rice from Peak Refuel. They had a breakfast skillet that's completely ridiculous. The only thing about the breakfast skillet that I didn't like was it took quite a bit of water. And where we were, there's no water. I mean, there is no water.
There was water.
But yeah, good luck.
50% water, 50%
cow manure.
Yeah.
There's just very little water in there. So we actually ended up packing most of our water in. We packed, I think both of our packs are probably 80, 90 pounds going in there because we loaded a lot of water in with us. But so I try to look for something that maybe takes, you know, two thirds of a cup to maybe a cup of water to make. especially in the morning. Get up, make some breakfast, a little bit of coffee in the morning. You don't want to chew through a bunch of your water. But these meals are incredible. Check them out. Heather's Choice, too, our friend up in Alaska, she's cranking out some really good stuff. And I like her stuff, too, because it's compact. There's a bunch of protein and a really small package, and you get fueled up and ready to go without, again, carrying a bunch of stuff around with you and using up a bunch of water.
Sure. Yep. And then the snack part of it, you know, moving away from the meals. Heather has those Packaroons.
Oh, yeah, they're good. They're great with coffee, too, in the morning.
That's what I was doing in the morning kind of for breakfast because I don't typically eat a big breakfast in the morning. I'll do that on the mountain during glassing. But her Packaroons have changed. They used to be you needed some water to get those things down.
They were dry.
Yeah,
and
they're,
for sure.
They're way better now.
Yeah, yeah.
Way better. I dig those Packaroons.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and then, you know, we were talking chronic wasting disease. Now, we don't have it here in Washington yet, but it is spreading like wildfire across the West. A total of 26 states have chronic wasting, CWD now, 2 provinces. They've even got it in South Korea. It just popped up over there, and it is bad news. Let me tell you, we do not want it in our wild ungulate herds. Deer, elk, moose. Can pick it up, bison, and we do not want it in the state, and you've got to be very careful. The number of hunters, including ourselves, traveling out of state now, there's a lot of laws and guidelines about bringing that stuff back into our state, and you can't have any spinal cord attached or brain tissue, and basically you don't want any tissue at all coming back in the state that isn't processed meat. And I know when we go to Montana, I'm going to bring my propane boiler with us, and we're going to process out all of our skulls and all of our European mounts and everything over in Montana. So there's no risk of bringing that stuff home.
Yeah. And I mean, the last thing we want, we don't have the deer herds here like some of these Western states. So the last thing we want to do is bring this thing to Washington and affect our herds. You know, it's pretty easy to not travel across lines with this stuff. You got to, like you said, you got to either boil your skull out or make sure you get all the flesh, the brain matter, all that stuff out of there. There's actually, you and I were looking, there's some testing kits now, and we're going to take a testing kit with us over there.
We're going to order a couple of those. Yeah.
Because, listen, you
get
don't want to be
COVID
eating.
Test kits and our chronic wasting disease test all, kits.
Listen, we're going to have a lot of test kits.
We'll just be testing. We're a mobile lab heading for Montana.
Yeah.
I'm waiting. This is another one that you guys would rock out in the cabin?
Yeah.
The lodge? What lodge you work at?
Katmai Lodge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a big operation.
Big operation.
I know so many people that work there. Epic.
I think we'd be up to 35 guys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All of them back there rocking out to
Madonna. Dancing, breaking it down, man.
In the ghetto. Mm-hmm. That's where we lived.
You have a strobe light in your little cabin back there?
We barely had lights.
They wouldn't give you that much.
No.
Would Well, I tell you what, we're going to jump out of here for a quick break. We'll come back. We're going to reach out to Brianna Zimmerman, Sporco Pro Staffer, stuck yet another giant bull archery hunting in Idaho.
Yeah, I'm not hunting with you anymore. I'm going to go with Brianna.
She's a lot better looking at me, too. Let me tell you.
Yeah. Give me a break.
This is the Outdoor Line at 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome to the BOMAC Tech Line. BOMAC has all the gear for all your techniques, and SMI Shellfish gear is simply the best. BOMAC, we catch big fish.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. Getting a bunch of texts here, 710-710, brought to you by Yamaha Outboards. We'll get to those here in a bit, but first we need to reach out to, we just reached out to, excuse me, Brianna Zimmerman down in the south end. You with us, Brianna?
I am, hi.
Good morning, how you
morning.
Doing? And congrats again, my gosh. Well, are you already booked up solid for next year? You got a couple guys here that want to tag along with you over there. You and Jeff, you and your husband. You guys have just literally been killing it the last few years on the elk. My goodness.
Yeah, we've gotten pretty lucky in the elk department.
Well, I tell you what, lucky, yes, maybe, but you both of you work your tails off, working out, shooting your bows every day. I know you do a lot of homework. In the off season on these elk, and I'm sure you were over there scouting ahead of time. Talk about kind of what went into taking this big bull this year and how much time you spent over there in Idaho on this hunt, Brianna.
You know, this year was kind of interesting because I didn't actually have my tag until August. And so going into it all, you know, spring as the draws were coming out and summer, I thought that I was going to be calling for him on a tag that he drew in Wyoming. And so It was kind of a little bit of a different summer for me, only in the mental area, and that I wasn't mentally ready to take my bow into the woods. But I was still, you know, shooting my bow every day and working out and just making sure that I stay ready so I don't have to get ready next season. And so when I did draw the tag, it was kind of like, okay, well, I guess I'm ready. There's no reason why I shouldn't. It's only a month away, but I just won't go to Wyoming with you and I'll go to Idaho instead. And he was going to be in Idaho. He was going to be in Wyoming the week before. So it was an area that we had hunted. I think this was our third season hunting it. So we didn't have to go over there and scout, which was nice. So we put a lot of focus on his Wyoming tag because that was a pretty cool draw. And he ended up filling that tag in, I think he was there for like 2.5 days. And then he headed to Idaho, and I met him in Idaho.
With 8,000 pounds of elk meat on the way home there from both of those trips.
Well, and so you and I talked a little bit yesterday. You killed that bull on what, day 8?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was a really long hunt.
Were you seeing bulls every day? Were they talking or were they quiet? I mean, we were up in Northwest Montana, and I mean, we ran into more predators than elk to begin with.
But I think kind of all over, it sounded like, quiet. You know, the elk were kind of quiet.
What was the gist there?
Yeah, it was really quiet. This was actually that day that I shot the bull was the only day I saw any bulls, and it was all within a 10-minute period. I didn't see any other bulls the whole time. And I think we jumped 2 sets of cows. So it's not even like we were seeing cows. I just didn't see very many elk, period, in the first 7 days. And we'd get, you know, a random response here and there, but it would never, like, turn into anything. And we did, I mean, basically all day just cold setups, thinking, like, there's got to be an elk down there. There's got to be an elk over there. Let's just do a setup, and it'll come in, or it'll respond, or something. And it was just, like, silent the whole week. And we kind of went all over the unit. We went to new areas that we hadn't hunted in the prior years and went to areas that we were successful in the prior years. And then this one just kind of came out of nowhere. And it took them, I mean, just probably an hour before they started responding, we were 500 yards above them, and we did a cold setup, and they didn't say anything. And then we were on our way out, and we heard one bugle, and we were like, what? Well, we got to go get it. It's like the only bugle we hear. And they actually responded, and there turned out to be a bunch of bulls. And it was super, super exciting. I pretty much just swapped back and forth for 10 minutes between a herd bull and then satellite bulls that just kept coming over and over and over trying to get myself a shot at anything. I would have taken a cow had it been solo. But the one I shot ended up being a satellite bull, but the bulls were all fairly similar in size. And so I pretty much was like, the first bull that I can get myself a shot at is the one that I'm taking. It was our last day, and I just got really lucky again.
No. You didn't get lucky. So here's the deal with elk hunting, and it happens all the time. Guys go into the woods or ladies go into the woods. The woods almost feel empty when nothing's happening, when the rut's kind of down, the bulls aren't talking. The elk don't move around as much during that time. They just kind of hunker down. And then what will happen one day, if you stick it out like you did, you're a grinder. We talked about this yesterday. You're going to stay there until your days are gone. You don't have any days left to hunt. One of those mornings, one of those evenings, the switch will flip and boom, it'll happen. And it's happened to me. It's happened to you, Rob. It's happened to you, Brianna. That's the deal. You have to be, you said it yesterday, they're not going to come and get in the back of your truck. You got to be out there chasing them around the woods, and you guys stuck it out, and you're successful because of that.
I'll definitely take that, because we did grind it out, and like we talked about yesterday, there was, I mean, Jeff taught me very early in our relationship that it's not going to just, a fish isn't going to crawl into my catch cooler and elk's not going to crawl into the back of my truck bed. So if I'm not out there, then it's not going to happen.
I like Jeff.
Oh, Jeff's solid guy.
I'm going to have to tune up my wife here. Listen, you got to stick it out. I want
you
out
down
there.
And...
Yeah. Listen, it's going to be a 12-hour day on the boat, but those fish aren't going to jump in the cooler.
Hey, were you seeing signs, something to give you hope? Were you seeing, you know, elk trails and a lot of sign around when you were out there on this hunt, Brianna?
Occasionally, we would find, you know, some good rubs. In this particular area where we had done a cold setup about 500 yards above where the elk were, there was actually a lot of really good rubs that were pretty fresh. And so that area had the best sign that we had seen out of everywhere. Except there was one day we dropped off a mountaintop that was like 9 miles down. It was really terrible, terribly steep, except right in the gut was super nice. And, you know, we were like, there's got to be elk back here.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one day I was like, I'm not shooting a cow back here. If I shoot something back here, it's got to be really good.
Bring your fork and knife with you.
Hey, Brianna, so one of the toughest things for me is the actual shot. Like when that bull comes in and you gotta make that shot, what's going through your head at that point? Because I know a lot of times I don't even remember what goes down because I'm just kind of like freaking out. I get very excited. My heart is pumping. Can you keep it under control? Can you stay calm in that situation?
You know, it is the weirdest thing because I am the total opposite. And I've seen Joel Turner a couple times with Shot IQ to help me with my target panic because I get it really bad just over the summer. And the more I shoot, the worse it gets. And I don't know why it's like that when I'm just practicing. But when there's actually an animal in front of me, I mean, I can't even focus on like the antlers. Once I determine that that elk is one that I'm going to shoot, it's literally all I can do is focus on what is that animal doing and where are those vitals? And it's like everything just happens perfectly. I draw my bow back and I'm like, line my sight up, put my anchor point together. Like it's weird how everything else disappears from my mind. And I'm able to confidently make that shot, and feel really good about at least what I did on my end. But when I'm practicing, I can't do that.
Well,
I did the same thing years ago
that way.
Too, Brianna. I used to have target panic pretty bad in the early days, and then I decided one day that once I made the decision to actually take this animal, I deleted everything in my mind about the antlers and about everything else. Just focus on the vitals and making the shot, and that really helped calm me down. And since then, I haven't suffered from it hardly at all. I've had it after making a shot a couple times. I shot a tiny little blacktail out on the Olympic Peninsula a few years ago. And afterwards, I'm shaking like a leaf, you know. But pretty exciting stuff. Now, you got two or three elk because Jeff got one in Wyoming. How many elk did you guys bring home?
Yeah, so Jeff got one in Wyoming. Yeah. I got the one in Idaho on the last day. Mm-hmm. And then we had a friend, Mike, with us who got one 4 days before mine. So all three of us went home with a bull.
Jeez.
And they were all 6-point bulls. They were all pretty nice. So we all had a successful, very successful year.
I'll say.
Very traditional.
Oh, heck yeah. Now you bring them home and you guys do all the processing yourselves. What's that like? I mean, what kind of time frame are you looking at? Because you take X number of days off from work, but I don't think most folks consider the fact that you got to process meat for at least a day, day and a half when they get
at
home.
At least.
Oh, yeah. What goes into that, Brianna?
You know, I wish that we did factor that in, but when you have more days off and the season is still open, I'm not going to go home with days left to hunt and no days to work if my tag's not filled. Like, I don't want to go home to process meat. I got to keep working on my tag.
Yeah.
So we go back to work the day after we get home. We usually get home in the evening, and then we get up in the morning and go back to work. And so we process the meat after work, and we pretty much are like, we have 1 week. And it depends on how our storage is, you know, if we're like still got things in the cooler and we're putting ice on it every day, then we got to work a little bit faster. But, we usually spend about 3 or 4 hours after work every night and just trimming everything, getting the steaks, packed up, and then the grind will freeze. And then like that next weekend we'll grind everything and then package the grind.
Yeah. Favorite way to cook a steak?
probably just a fried steak with like gravy and then mashed potatoes. I'm not the cook. I wish that I was the cook. Jeff is a great cook. I have about 10 meals that I know how to make, and I can make them really well. But if I venture outside of those 10 meals, it's not usually very good.
Poor Jeff. You show him up on the mountain, and he's, you know,
and then
he's
got to go home and cook.
Does he vacuum and do laundry too, and all that other stuff? This guy, he's like the Renaissance man.
I wish he would do that.
So we spend a lot of time driving to and from these hunts. And Joe and I mean, we listen to podcasts, we listen to music, we listen to all kinds of stuff. And we kind of, on the, you know, going to and from these hunts that we go on, we're like, we kind of start rating the music that we listen to, you know? What are you guys rocking on these trips?
We're usually fighting over music, so it depends on who else is with us, but I almost always lose. And we're either listening to podcasts or we're listening to, like, classic rock.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Or Jeff is
my choice. But.
Jeff is wanting the Paula Abdul.
Jeff wants Paula Abdul, and you want AC/DC, the greatest band of all time.
That's exactly how it goes.
Well, thanks for jumping on with us, Brianna. We look forward to seeing you down at Sportco. You're a pro staffer down there, and I love seeing you at all the events in a Sportco and Outdoor Emporium. Have yourself a great weekend, and appreciate you jumping on the Outdoor Line with us.
Later, killer.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you, sister. All right, after the break, picks of the week right here on the Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Welcome to the Outdoor Line Picks of the Week, presented by Raymarine Electronics. Don't just go fishing, go hunting underwater. Raymarine, simply superior.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Line. Rob Ensley here along with Joey Pyburn this morning in studio here in downtown Seattle. Still a little dark outside. Surprisingly pretty warm coming in this morning. Banana
that,
Express, kind of a
crazy
program
big
going
storm
on out
rolling
there.
In here.
Nelly is in Montana. He's got his new Max Long Range Browning. You had him at the range this week. You guys were printing some groups with that thing. 6.8 Western Vortex LHT scope. That thing's a tack driver. And then Nelly was sending us pictures yesterday. He got back there a couple of days early, and they were shooting out to 500 yards. And he was printing some groups too.
Oh, they were. Some of those bullets were touching.
Oh yeah.
I think he's probably more confident in that rifle than any rifle he's ever owned. He was also shooting his 6.5 and shooting out to 500 with that. But that Max Long Range is like, that thing is a sweet, sweet piece of equipment, man.
Oh, for sure. Semi-custom rifle.
Yeah. Has that new recoil hog on it.
Which
we got to get a couple of those.
Yeah, for sure. Picks of the week. I know, Joe, you've got a couple. I've got a couple. What do you got, man?
Boy, if you haven't filled your deer tag, we got, you know, obviously we got some rain in the mountains right now, but it's going to be switching over. The temperature is going to drop. The last few days of this general deer season, man, if I hadn't filled my tag, I would be in the mountains chasing mule deer. We saw a little bit of kind of rut action, little pre-rut stuff going on, and the weather where we were was extremely warm. With this switch in the weather, I think these bucks could start to move, start to look for does, at least be, you know, running around checking groups of does. So I'd be up in the mountains looking for a mule deer.
And sit up high and glass.
And glass.
And just sit there all morning. Glass. Yep. And that's kind of what we did preseason. You know, we got in there Thursday, 2 days ahead of time, and we both found vantage points and just parked it.
Yeah.
And sat there, and we didn't want to move around anyway and push deer out and spook anything out of our area, but it worked out pretty good. And now you can do the same. I mean, some of these high country deer just get up on a big vantage point and just sit there and pick the place apart, you know?
And it's fun. Like, once you learn to love glassing, which can be, you know, look, you're sitting in one spot or moving around very little. But it's kind of, especially when you're sitting next to your buddy and you're both picking apart the hillside, it's fun. Like, Rob's got great eyes, man. He spots deer in places that, you know, most people just aren't going to see the deer because you're not seeing a deer. You're seeing an ear, a little piece.
Or a foot.
Yeah.
Sticking down
or
below
just
a
whatever.
Bush or
just
yeah.
a very small part of the deer. So it's fun to sit there with your buddy or even by yourself and challenge yourself and try to find those deer on the mountain because they're there. It's just, there's so many places they can hide. You can see a deer in the open. They can walk 5 feet and bed down, and you're not going to see them again.
Well, and I think even here on the west side, you know, for the folks that hunt blacktail over here, you know, you're kind of close range on some of this stuff. You're hunting the edge of the clear cuts, and it's a lot of clear cut hunting over there, over here on this side of the mountains. Weather can be a factor. It could be raining and pouring and blowing and miserable, and you feel like you don't need to pull out your binoculars. But these bucks hang out on the edges of the clear cuts. And they dip into the clear cut in the morning, feed for a little bit, and they go right back into the timber.
Yeah.
And they're in and out all day long. And you got to glass those edges, and it might be 50 to 100 yards away. But you got to glass that stuff because you'll pick out a throat patch or an ear or an antler or just a nose sticking out of the brush or something. And it's funny, they'll sit on the edge of the timber, and they'll sit there and they'll watch. And all you see is their face sticking out of the brush, and they're just like scanning, like, where is he? I know he's out there somewhere, you know? And they'll sit in there for half an hour, maybe an hour at times.
Sure.
And just watch. And then when they know it's safe, they'll dip out into that clear cut in the morning and feed real quick and then head back into the timber. But you got a glass to pick that
glass,
stuff up.
Glass.
Yeah.
And get good glass. You were running those Vortex 10
UHDs.
Those were 10 power
10
UHDs.
Power. Yep.
Crystal clear.
Yeah.
And I ran the 10x42 HD Furies, which I really dig those. They've kind of become my number
one. Range-finding binoculars.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's funny. Let's see. I glassed that buck up on Friday. They actually ended up going all the way across and met up with your buck, we think. And that deer stood in one spot for an hour and a half.
And then move. Almost like the WDFW decoy down there swinging its head around.
It just stood there in one spot. And I saw a bunch of elk. So I was kind of preoccupied looking at the elk. And then I'd go back down and look. I'm like, that deer is just like stuck in one spot.
Yeah.
And he didn't move a muscle for an hour and a half.
Yeah. Crazy deer. We've also got some coho fishing going on. You were on the Skagit yesterday. The Hump Tulips is cranking out coho. There's a bunch of silvers out that way. Chehalis system, the cowlets. They're still getting coho in that Forks area. Just got an extension on the Skagit River through the end of the year up there, which is great news for folks up on the north end.
Yeah.
A lot of folks out on the Skagit right now. And fishing's been good up there. And the Cascade is open through the end of November. So you can get up there and probably even there should be some chums up there at some point, too, to wrestle around with. They're closed, but, you know, you'll incidentally rope into one of those fishing for coho and you know, take all your line and abuse your gear and break off all your stuff.
I caught like a 15-pound king yesterday, like one of those true wild Skagit, adipose fin.
Big rudder on it.
Yeah, huge. Yeah. And, you know, on light gear, I don't know, it took me probably 15 minutes to get that thing in. Just beat me up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A spinning rod?
Yeah.
You guys were throwing Vibrex spinners, wiggle warts, and Brad's Wigglers. Okay, and Twitch and Jigs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any color patterns or anything? I mean, was anything working better than anything else? Or?
On the plugs, we were running like purple with a pink stripe down the back. Little bit of sparkle on there. That seemed to be the better one. Spinners, green body, silver blade, and a glow hoochie, little mini hoochie on the hook. That was the best spinner, and it caught more fish than I think anything.
What size?
Was it
a Vibrex?
No,
homemade? Okay.
Homemade.
So they're heavy.
Matt Chandler from Get Hook Northwest, I was fishing with him. He's making all his own stuff. They're like the size of a number
four or five, probably.
Blue
nice
fox.
Nice when you make them yourself, you can make them a lot heavier.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he had big bodies on them, so they were heavy. And then Matt was twitching, and he was running purples and blacks. And that seems to be the deal. The water temp up, or the water clarity up there is a little, it's got a little bit of color to it. So it seems like the purples and the blacks on the twitch and jigs. And I'm not like a twitcher.
People think it's jigging. It's not jigging.
No,
it's twitching, and you're just barely, and it's more of a snap with your wrist. But people want to get their whole arm involved and swing that sucker way up there.
And Matt was roping them, man.
Yeah.
We got into a little piece of water that wasn't really great for fishing spinners or the plugs, and Matt was just he would like be twitching towards the boat, and you'd see the jig coming, and these cohorts like coming up and taking swipes at it. It was a blast, dude. That was fun getting up there yesterday and doing some coho fishing.
Yeah, super fun this time of year. Hey, we got a bunch of texts we've got to get to. Shoot us a text, 206-421-3776 is a new text number. Joey, if we get a deer this weekend, we are definitely trying steak on a stick. Super popular, man, and it's so good. especially when, I mean, we were grinding for days up there on top of that mountain just to have a nice steak, sit down, a fresh backstrap steak.
Well, and when you shot that buck, we went down to it, took a couple photos, and then you were nice enough to let me get out of there. And you,
well, I was close enough. I just loaded the whole thing up and took it down the mountain, but yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Just loaded the whole thing up. It's still a grind.
Oh, right? There was a load.
Because I did mine and took two trips on mine, and that's a tough mountain to climb down. But Rob cut me loose, and I was able to go hunting. But I was like, hey, make sure to bring like a nice big chunk back so we can eat it tonight. And then the whole time I was hiking around hunting the rest of the day, I was like, shoot, I didn't bring any seasoning. I hope Rob has seasoning. And sure enough, you did.
Oh, that Montreal seasoning. I think it's called Maple Blend or something. It is so good. And I always bring just a little Ziploc, throw it in my pack, and just sprinkle it on top of there.
And then we just, like you said, laid in the dirt and ate deer meat for like an hour.
Yeah. Like a bunch of wolves around a fresh kill. Love your show. Listen to your show and hear you talk about fishing and hunting. Gives me great memories with my dad and brother. They were my only fishing and hunting partners. The text from the 253. Hey, what color was that Brad's Wiggler again from the 360 on the north end?
So we ran a couple different ones, but it seems like purple with the pink stripe down the back. And I don't do a lot of that. So I don't know exactly what, I'm sure it has a name, that particular Wiggler, but anything purple, there was a purple with a pink butt. That seemed to be money. And that's a fun way to fish, dude. I've never done it. I've never casted plugs for coho like that.
Well, like were they hitting right at the rod tip?
Yeah, it's like bass fishing for coho.
And you're fishing in those frog ponds.
Yeah.
Usually. I mean, a lot of times, well, we used to drift too out in the middle of the river and cast way out into those deep runs out in the actual current. But a lot of time we'd be up in the frog ponds, we called them. No current at all. Just those back head areas, like when it floods, it carves out those big areas, you know, the big lakes, off channel lakes. And those coho get in there and they just mill around. And you go in there, and I used to have a little trolling motor, literally bass fishing style, and we'd putz around in there and throw plugs all over the place. And then they chase them right to the boat. Were they hitting right at the rod tip, or were they hitting out of ways?
The first one that we got, Chris Sherwood, was on the bow of the boat, and he's reeling in, and there was probably only 2 feet of line left when it hit.
Yeah.
And so it was like, I got one! And Matt just grabbed the net
and scooped
like,
it right
netted
out.
It. Yeah. And that was it.
Well, sometimes
you never got to take any line.
They forget to go.
Yeah,
they sit and spin and roll and spin and roll. And yeah, if you hook them way out, then they got some time to get going.
Everybody was catching fish up there too. Like all the boats. Neat. You know, some guys are hooking 20 coho a day up there. I mean, it's
good,
it's
numbers
on fire.
Yeah, well, it should go right on through here into November with the way it's looking up there, which is good news. And hopefully, I mean, it'll be early, you know, but hopefully we start seeing some wild steelhead in there in kind of the latter part of that season. Guys may be releasing some wild fish up there. That would be a great sign up there on the Skagit system to get some early wild steelhead up there.
It would, man. I want to get up there so bad. That's such a fun time to fish on the Skagit late like that when it's cold and like those cold, sunny days and you see the mountains.
Oh, gorgeous up there. And then the dolly fishing, too.
Yep.
I mean, that used to be one of my favorite things. Bring the five weights up there and target those dollies because they get in there and feed on the chum eggs and all the spawned out salmon stuff coming down the river, and they can just be some tanker dollies in there. And it's a fun deal. It's kind of a match the hatch deal. You can fish egg patterns, flesh patterns, all that stuff. And once you get later in the year, you go to a little more of a fry pattern or an alvin pattern or something, alvin coming out of the gravel, and get those things to go.
Do those follow up? They come up early, like they follow all the. Do they just come up in the fall, or do they follow the salmon up right away in the summertime? Like, are they up
there
now?
They'll spawn up there in the summertime.
Okay.
Yeah, we used to target them up there in June, July, heading up into the creeks, way up high in the Skagit. Wouldn't see anybody anywhere. And those fish would be going in there then, but some of them go out to the saltwater too. Mm-hmm. You know, springtime, we'd see them out in the salt.
Yeah.
I mean, fishing with Chris Senuel up there on the north end, listening to Paul Abdul, Madonna. Targeting Dolly Varden. Way too much fun working at a lodge in Alaska.
It is.
Rocking out the, I guess this wouldn't be rocking out. Little dance party at the cabin.
Little dance party.
Up on the strobe light and the black light. After the break, the honk stumper himself, he might be more of a rap guy. What do you think?
Rap?
Yeah. Snoop Dogg or something?
I don't know.
Well, we'll check in with him right after the break, 7 o'clock. Jess Pryles, Hardcore Carnivore 725. It's the Outdoor Lineup 710 ESPN Seattle.